This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast. I'm Louisa Evans, and I talk to my guests about the joys of sobriety and the benefits that it's brought them. We talk a bit about their story and how they got sober, but we also talk about why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm going to be talking to Emily about her sobriety and to find out more about how things have changed for her and her life since she stopped drinking alcohol. So hello, Emily, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, Louisa?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure. I'm really happy to be here. It's so nice to get a chance to just have a good chat with you and have some time to kind of reflect on everything. It was a really nice exercise to think about, you know, the topics that I'm going to bring today. So it was really nice.
It is lovely, isn't it? Looking back at those positives of sobriety.
Yes, absolutely.
I enjoy doing it myself. Yeah. So just to start off with then, share whatever you'd like to about your journey into sobriety. Why did you choose to go sober? What was behind it?
Ooh, well, how long have you got?
Well, about an hour.
Okay. So basically, I've had two stints at it. So I'm currently 16 months sober, and long may it continue. I feel like I'm really thriving in my sobriety. Prior to that, I actually got 15 months sober, but there was a lot of things that I wasn't doing that didn't help. I was still kind of, my head was still living in the past, living in old Emily. And I convinced myself that I could try and moderate and I should go out and drink and, you know, who am I if I don't have a glass of wine in my hand type thing. But I'll rewind a little bit to the reason why I chose, needed, wanted to get sober, really. I just spent my whole teenage 20s, 30s in a drinking culture, surrounded by people that were drinking. I think I sort of chose to hide in plain sight, so I would literally kind of attach myself to people that drank like me. I was always chasing the fun, and in the early days it was fun, to be honest. But then I started to notice as I got a bit older that people were growing up and people were moving on and people were becoming proper grown-ups, and I was still rolling out of a pub in Camden and stumbling home. And I blinked and I was sort of in my early 30s. Career-wise, I was a primary school teacher, but it wasn't a real burning passion of mine. It was just sort of ticking a box, really. My passion was drinking, if I'm honest. It really was. In my early 30s, I thought something needs to change. And I thought, I know what will fix me: having children. So I had two babies in very quick succession, and it did not fix me. And then I was really conflicted and confused and in a real identity crisis, because I'd gone from this, I was going to say fun loving, but by that point it wasn't really fun and I wasn't very loving. But, you know, from a heavy drinker to a parent in the suburbs, and I didn't know who I was. And I didn't stop drinking, but my drinking changed because obviously I was at home. I was stuck at home. The freedom was gone. And then I had every good reason in the world to drink, because I was full of self-pity and, oh, woe is me, and I can't go out and my life's changed and it's so boring and I feel so isolated and alone. So I then started to drink alone at home. And it really started to spiral. And I split up with their dad, so even more reason for me to have an epic pity party. And I was bringing up the kids on my own. And then COVID happened and lockdown one came. It was not fun. I was in such a dark place and I was drinking. So I drank throughout that time. And when lockdown two approached, I thought to myself, if I carry on the way I am going, something is going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but I really need to make a conscious decision here to try and change my game and to remove alcohol. I knew that it was alcohol. I knew for years that my relationship with alcohol wasn't, quote, normal. I was dependent on it. I was using it to soothe pain. I was using it to escape. I was using it to try and connect. It was really unhealthy. So I decided that I had to do something about it. I reached out to someone that I knew. And at that time, the only person I knew who was sober was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a friend from years ago. And we hadn't spoken. And I sent him a message saying, I think I need help with alcohol and I want to stop. And 2 hours later, I got a phone call from him. And we talked at length and then he took me to a meeting. So that was my introduction into sobriety, was going to AA, which I still go to. And that was the start. And I didn't know at that time what was ahead. I thought it was just about removing alcohol and putting down the drink. And it is and has been about so, so much more. And I feel like everything has changed for the better and is continuing to change and evolve. But that first chunk of time that I got in sobriety, I just felt like, is this it? Is this my life now? And I didn't recognize myself. Again, it was a bit of an identity crisis. So once I'd gone out and done a bit more research and realized that I really should not drink alcohol, it was just consequences in the end. It used to be fun, then fun with consequences, and then it was just became consequences. And the older I've got, it was really impacting my mental health and my level of anxiety and my behavior and my choices, really, my life choices. It wasn't so much in the moment when I was drinking, I would do something horrific. It was more insidious than that. It was more kind of just, I was living in this fog, in this haze, and I didn't have any clarity in my life. I didn't know myself. I didn't know what I wanted, what my values were. So I just made bad choices that impacted me and my family. Thankfully, I'd had experience of the tools available and I knew people that were in sobriety. And this time round, the thing that was different was that I connected to the sober social community, which I didn't know was there. And I couldn't believe it. If it's all there, I can cherry pick what I want. There isn't a rule book to getting and staying and living sober, you know, whatever works. And I just thought, wow, the more the merrier, the more connection I can have, the more knowledge and education and understanding I can have about the effects, the physical effects of alcohol, about addiction, about behaviors. I just wanted it all. So I really dug in and created my Instagram account and connected with different groups and different people and randomly decided to make almost daily reels about what's going on in my head or things that I've heard and learned about, because I used to hear all this gold, these nuggets of wisdom, and think everyone should hear this. Like, this is invaluable. So I just thought, well, I'll post it on Instagram. It's helped so, so much, because I don't feel boxed in to one type of recovery or sobriety journey anymore. I can choose, you know, whichever way I want that's going to work for me. And here I am today with you. Which is a joy.
And it is, isn't it? It's that I did exactly the same thing. I didn't know why I joined Instagram, but
I just knew I wanted accountability, and I knew I wanted to just say I was going to post daily.
For me, I had learned through AA the power of sharing, out loud what's going on in my head and how I'm feeling, because it just makes me feel less alone. And you take the power out of it when you verbalize it or write it down. So for me, it was about that as well. It was like another platform, another place where I could share what was going on. And then obviously you get the feedback from people saying, I feel like that too, or that's so useful, or this, you know, this is how I navigated through that. It's so helpful. But you say about lurking in the background, I did do that for a little while. I lurked in the background of the sober space. I didn't like anything, I didn't comment, but I would watch people's reels and posts and lives, and it really helped me.
And how lovely of your friend, you know, you said that friend of yours who you sent that message out of the blue. I do find that with people who've had a problem with alcohol, they are so open-hearted.
Yeah.
And, you know, open armed and just look, I'll help you. I'll take you to an AA meeting, or I'll welcome you into this space. I'll tell you what worked for me. It's amazing.
You've been through it. You get it. You understand it. And the thing is that personally for me, when I was in my drinking, I felt alone. I drank alone. I felt alone with the way that I thought and felt. And, you know, secrets die in the light. And so it's that thing of, if you expose it, if you get it out there and you pick up the phone, then that person knows, they know how isolating and lonely drinking can be. And they also know the benefits, the endless benefits that you can get in your life by removing it. So why wouldn't you want to help? And as you've mentioned, you know, I've learned since putting down the drink that really helping others in some capacity gets me out of my own head, gets me away from my stinking thinking and my negative thought patterns. There is nothing greater, there is nothing nicer than knowing that you are supporting or contributing in some way to someone's journey in sobriety, because we know, because we're living it, it is the best thing you can do.
So it's that sense of life purpose, isn't it? And it does feel lonely. You were talking there about when you were a single parent then.
Being a single parent is isolating and is lonely. And it depends on the circumstances, obviously. But and parenting generally, I know, you know,
I was going to say, parenting
happily
anyway.
Married couples. And I speak, you know, I speak to these women at the school gates, and they feel, again, like they've lost their identity, like they're alone, like they... Like the parent guilt trap that, you know, that is so easy to fall into. I think it's a big area that isn't really talked about very much, that there is no rule book. And from one minute to the next, you arrive in parenting and you lose your old life, and you lose those connections and the contacts, and you don't know who you are. And then if you already like are partial to a glass of wine, then it turns into a bottle or two bottles of wine a night. So it doesn't surprise me that my drinking escalated as much as it did. It was just really, really hard at that time. And that's it. And that's why when it comes to giving back or helping others, it was all about me when I was drinking. It was all about what's wrong with Emily, what's the world done to Emily, what Emily doesn't have, you know. And so it's just so lovely to be now living in a way that I know that if I look outwards, that's where I'm going to find the joy, you know.
And alcohol is sold as the solution, isn't it? You know, I mean, we are victim of marketing when it comes to mummy wine culture and things like that. So obviously it's taking ownership for our choices, but there is a really strong culture in this country, particularly where mums, the play dates, the school gates, it just was enabling each other, wasn't it?
Totally. And I think even now we've had recent secondary school allocations and stress with all of that. And every parent I speak to is like, oh, thank God for gin. When you're sober, you really hear those comments. But before, that would have been me. That would have been me. I would have been enabling it. And I sought out the wine mums. I sought out the women that drank like me, that wanted to drink two bottles of wine on a Tuesday afternoon. that, you know, because then it normalized it for me or justified my drinking. But yeah, culturally, it's still there. I've turned up at the school gates and gone to the supermarket beforehand with a bottle of wine in my handbag and literally wrapped it in a jumper so that it wasn't jangling around in my bag because I was so paranoid about people hearing it. You know, I mean, I used to turn up and I'd have had a boozy lunch and I'd be on the polo mints trying to hide the fact, like, oh, do I smell of wine? And looking at other mums who seem to have it all together, saying, well, why aren't I like that? It can be hard because it's that compare and despair constantly as well with parenting.
In life, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And I used to go for the, you know, the parent picnics and I'd be like, oh, have I got enough? I'd have a bottle of wine. I'd take a bottle of Prosecco. I'd take four cans of Marks and Spencer's gin and tonics, thinking, oh, well, there'll be enough for everyone. You know, I want to make sure that everyone's drinking as much as I am. But really, people would go and they might have, I don't know, a Budweiser or something. And I'd have this bag of booze, like you say. Like, and when you look back, it's insanity, but you can get caught up in it. It's an easy culture to get caught up in. It really is.
You know, you don't want to come across as being like a total killjoy.
Yeah.
But you see it and you go, well, it's no wonder I thought that was normal.
Exactly.
And then it normalized my drinking and I knew that it was wrong. But then I was looking at other people and comparing myself and saying, well, it can't be wrong because so-and-so down the road drinks like me and she's fine. Or like you say, compare and despair, or compare and actually justify your behavior.
Exactly. And I mean, thankfully, I don't know about you, but I really feel that the tide is slowly turning. Maybe it's because I'm not in that drinking world anymore, but there's definitely more people looking at their relationship with alcohol. It was totally normalized. And that link with stress. Oh, being a parent of young children is so stressful. Oh, thank God it's 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock. I can open that bottle of wine. It was just part of my DNA at that point.
So how did you change it then? You say you shifted it, you lurked on Instagram, you kind of had that background of AA. Then what started to shift for you? Did you just say, right, today's the day and I'm going to...
Yeah, I did. And actually it was the 13th of December. So it wasn't even like, right, it's January the 1st. You know, it was Christmas in 2 weeks. I was so sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. It was like an emotional rock bottom for me. I kind of bumbled along the bottom for years and I'd had sort of a bit of heartbreak around that time and I couldn't recover from it. I was utterly floored from this breakup and I obviously drank on it. There was a tiny part of me that knew Emily deserved more and that was capable of more, and that surely there must be more to life than this. There must be. And like I say, I'm, you know, so grateful that I did know someone that was sober. You know, I just sat there and kind of racked my brains and thought, who might be able to help me? Because to be honest, if I hadn't known him, I don't really know where I would have gone initially. But yeah, and then like I say, this time round when I started to see a whole world of the sober community and seeing people that looked like me, sound like me, you know, as a parent, as a working mum, flourishing in life, I was like, that's what I want. You know, I needed to see that it's not black and white. You're not a rock bottom park bench alcoholic or you're a normal drinker. And I really informed myself this time round. Like, I read a lot of the books. I love Alcohol Explained for me was the one.
Oh, yeah. William Porter.
You know, and I read that and I thought, you'd have to be a fool, Emily. You'd have to be a complete fool. Aside from all the emotional harm that you're doing to yourself and the fact that you're living hungover or drunk. So I just educated myself. And it was that. And then before I knew it, I did start to reach out to people. I started to post. I started to just experience the bright side of sobriety. Whereas that first time round, it was more about, oh, look what I've wasted all these years, and look where I've ended up, and is this me? But now I'm more of a kind of growth mindset where I'm like, wow, look at me now, and I'm flourishing, and look what's possible, and look at the potential. So that's what's really motivated me this time round, and it's a complete game changer for me.
A whole new world opens up to you. And on day one, you don't see that. You have to ride it out and go through those first weeks. And, you get glimpses, and then it gets more and
Yeah.
more. And then you feel stronger. And it's a process as long as
Yeah.
you're focused on the benefits.
Yeah, completely. Those early days, yes, connect and read and listen to as many podcasts as you can. The podcast completely saved me this time around. But just be gentle on yourself and just keep it in the day. Just start to tally up those days, and the days become weeks. And like you say, after a month or so, it's different for everyone. You start to notice these moments where you're like, oh, I feel really peaceful, or oh, how lovely is that sunrise, or oh, I feel really content today. And I remember feeling it, and I was like, what is this? What is this feeling? And then I was like, oh, this is my sobriety. And you start to get those little moments, and then those moments increase the further you move along your journey, and then you start to flourish and expand your own self-worth. And you just have to trust the process, which is really hard for people in the very, very early days. But we wouldn't all be here shouting from the rooftops about the joys of sobriety if it wasn't true.
I think that leads us really, really nicely then onto your first area of your life or thing that you're doing differently in
Yeah.
sobriety. What's your number one thing?
Yes. So the first thing that I thought of was how I view myself and the world, really. And I've touched on this already, but today I live feeling hopeful and excited and enthused by life overall. Life still happens, but I feel like there's possibilities and there's opportunities. When I was drinking, I was like living in deficit. My self-esteem was on the floor, my self-worth, that well, there wasn't any. And what I realize now in hindsight, now I am sober and have done some work, is that I just didn't love myself. I didn't love myself when I was drinking. And I felt like I wasn't capable. I would never dare to dream or manifest my future, or because I didn't think I was worthy of it. And the drinking just fueled that negative mindset. I also couldn't really sustain or commit to anything because it interfered with my drinking. It was like this narrative in my head that convinced me that I was pretty worthless, that I wasn't going to achieve anything that I put my mind to, that I wasn't good enough, that I was less than, And also I used external things, obviously alcohol, but shopping, men, attention, anything external or material to get a quick fix of, oh, this is going to make me happy. Something else outside of myself is going to make me happy. And it might have done for 10 minutes or an hour or a week, or but it was short-lived, and I lived in a constant state, as we've mentioned, of compare and despair. I just felt like, why has everyone else got this, and they've got it all together, and it's such an unhealthy place to be. And now I'm learning to know my own worth in my sobriety, and to believe in myself, and to believe that anything is possible for me. And my self-esteem and my confidence is rising because I can look back and go, wow, you stopped drinking alcohol, Emily. And in the depths of my drinking, nobody would have believed it. I was flying the flag for let's have a drink on a Tuesday afternoon. I was the enabler. I was Emily the drinker. And so for me to have done it from myself, made that decision, just that in itself has raised my self-esteem. And then it spirals into other areas of my life. And I also show myself now compassion and for things that have happened in the past and for things in life now as well. But I'm learning to show myself love and respect, really. And that impacts me, it impacts my children, and it impacts all the possibilities moving forward for me. And things like self-care. On the surface, when I was drinking, I think, you know, I'd get my nails done now and again. And to the outside world, I was, you know, functioning and everything's great. But actually, talking about health and doctors and things like that, I was so far down the list of priorities. If it came to health, if it came to finances, anything, I put myself at the bottom of the rung. And now I am learning to put myself up there. I am creeping up, and it's work in progress, but I'm creeping up there because I know that if I put myself and my sobriety first, then everything else will be first class. That, for me, is such a huge benefit of my sobriety. And the self-care, I mean, I could go on, but things like the exercise and foods, and it feeds into every area of my life. And forming new habits and, you know, habit stacking, kind of building new skills and learning, going back and studying and realizing that after 25 years, I couldn't write an essay. And actually, I'm quite good at it.
That's so cool.
Those little things are actually massive.
Did you do some studying then? What did you go in? So in sobriety, what did you go and do?
Yes, I did. So I've done an incredible, it was a 6-month diploma in mindset coaching and applied positive psychology.
Oh, I love a bit of positive psychology.
Yeah. Oh, it is so fascinating. And for me, you know, for my own self-development, it's been brilliant because it's all solution focused. For so long, I have lived in the problem, and now it's training my brain to live in the solution. Yeah, it was brilliant. And I loved doing all the homework and all the study. And another thing is that I made the most gorgeous friends. You know, I'm 44. When I was drinking, I don't remember the last time I made a real friend, you know, and I've met so many lovely people. And when I talk about like the way I view the world, I used to be so resentful. I used to think that life was just unfair. It was just written in stone. It was unfair for me, you know, woe is me. I thought that people were always after something. There was always an ulterior motive. And being sober, honestly, it has restored my faith in people. Like the love and encouragement and support and guidance, really, that I have been shown in my sobriety has just, it's blown me away. And these are people that don't want or expect anything in return, you know. And I didn't have people like that in my life, or I certainly didn't see them when I was drinking.
You don't notice them.
You don't, exactly. And I feel like I've been loved back to health. In AA, they say, we'll love you until you learn to love yourself. So yes, that would be my first benefit, which is a biggie, actually.
Yes, not small, is it? It's a massive one. That is amazing. Tell me, would old Emily roll her eyes at this Emily while she was a drinker?
Oh, God, it would be an epic bitch fest. I would have hated me.
Drinking Louisa would have joined you and would have sat there in our 20s.
Absolutely. You're so right. I haven't thought about it in that way. But actually, I have become the person that I had so much hate towards. But the reason that I obviously did, it's because I wanted what that person had, but I didn't know how to get it, and I didn't think it was possible for me.
That's a good rule in life, though, isn't it? You know, when anybody is directing hate towards you or somebody else, it's only a sign that a button is being pushed in them, that they want something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've struggled with it. Certain relationships since I've got sober, people in my life that knew me as Emily the drinker and are still drinking. It's really blown my mind you saying that, Louisa, because I haven't thought about it in that way.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was that, you know, I could see people functioning, thriving, loving themselves, you know, turning up, showing up for themselves in life. And I could just about turn up at the school gates at 9 o'clock, and my life's not like that anymore.
And I bet you that, you know, when you look at somebody now and you see them doing things and achieving things, you go, oh, how are they doing that? And you start to get excited about it rather than it pushing any buttons in you.
Totally. And that, again, I want people to thrive, you know.
Yeah.
And I used to just live in this sort of jealous, envious bubble. Like I said, like so resentful towards people. And if I'm, you know, hands on heart, you know, if something amazing happened, I would be annoyed. I'd be jealous. I'd be bitter about it. Whereas now I'm like, yay. And I'm like, this is, you know, it's the frequency that you put out.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I feel it. And I, of course, I want people to flourish. So it's fantastic.
Well, you stand a heck of a lot more chance of flourishing when you're not drinking. You do.
Oh. It wasn't an option. It was, for me personally, it was just stunting my growth emotionally and in life, just all of it. You know, the main thing being my self-worth and self-esteem. Like when it's on the floor, there's no way that you're going to be able to get some momentum and change your life because you're stuck. I was so stuck in my drinking. And the moment I removed it, and it did feel really unfamiliar and weird, and I was out of sorts, and I didn't know who I was, and all of that stuff initially. But as I've said, if you can just stick with it, and there's so many tools available to us now, if you can stick with it and start to spot the differences and the changes that you feel. I think that's the biggest thing for me is my, you know, is the relationship with myself, because that's impacted everything now.
Yeah, it's a powerful one.
Yeah.
So what's your second thing?
Right, so my second benefit would be relationships. And this, again, they kind of all feed into each other, but first and foremost, the relationship with myself, which we've talked about, but the relationship with my children has changed dramatically, but we haven't had deep conversations about my drinking or about my sobriety, but I can see it. I see that they are settled, that they are secure, that they feel safe. I can see their confidence rising, and I can see that they're proud of me. I don't know how to explain it, because like I say, we don't really have the conversations about it, but they're content. And I know that there were times in my drinking, and because of my choices and behaviors, they weren't steady and safe and content, and they are now. And they also can see the attitude that I have for myself, the self-love and the regard that I am holding for myself. They see me learning and writing the essays. They see me reading in my new reading corner, which obviously didn't exist. It actually was my wine corner. They see me talking to people like you. And so I'm setting an example, I hope. So that for me is huge. It's massive, because I wasn't setting an example before. And it's actually terrifying when I look back, if I was to continue the way that I did. You know, I mean, kitchen parties, friends round till all sorts of hours, kids running riot. You think they're having a good time because it's a free for all. They can help themselves to as many snacks as they want. They can make as much mess. They can stay up as late as they want. They kids don't want that, or mine
No,
don't. Mine
no, they
want them
don't,
to
do
be.
they? Yeah.
No, they feel safe when they know that you are in control, and that there are boundaries, and that you put them to bed at this time, and this is the routine, and this is how it happens every day. That erratic living, I think, made them feel quite unsafe. And I mean, the amount of pub lunches that I would take them to, and at the time I would gloss it over with, oh, you can have a fizzy drink and, a roast or a bag of crisps or whatever you like. But it was just an excuse for me to sit in a pub and drink. And that would have been after school pickup, and we're sitting in a bit of a stinky, moldy pub. And I'm sitting there with my two children. I'm not even sitting with another adult. Like, that's not normal behavior. And I don't want them growing up thinking that is okay. What I want to do and what I hope I'm doing is breaking a generational cycle. And I'm not saying that I was brought up in pubs, because I wasn't. But for me, I don't want them growing up thinking that that is normal to do that with your children, because now I don't feel like it is normal. I feel
Yeah.
like something was missing and something was wrong. And it's not wrong anymore. But also, when I talk about relationships, just people, like I've touched on friendships, and what I look for in a friend has changed. And I still have beautiful people in my life and friendships that I've had since I was at university. But there has been a real period of adjustment in those old friendships, and they've evolved into something different, because the most people in my life, if I'm honest, were drinking partners. Remove the alcohol from me, and that dynamic doesn't work anymore. So we've had to kind of, I've almost taken a sabbatical and kind of come back as this newer, shinier, healthier version with a bundle more stuff to offer as a friend.
Yeah.
I'm more present. I'm more consistent. I'm more thoughtful. All of those things, but it has taken time. And for some of those friendships, it's been really hard for people to get their head around my sobriety. And I almost feel like it was like a period of grieving. But I am evolving, and so it's not easy all of the time with friendships. In the early stages, but when you're through the other side, it's been a complete game changer. It really has. And also the fact that I've made so many wonderful new friends who align with my values and my beliefs, who feed my soul, who are just what I am drawn to in a person is the polar opposite to what I was drawn to before.
So what was
So,
that then? What did old Emily used to look
oh,
for?
anyone that wanted to drink all night long, anyone that wanted to go fun seeking, and any kind of carnage, chaos. I lived in the highs and the lows. I wanted the epic highs, and I'd suffer the lows. Yes, there might have been people that had plenty of charisma and plenty of chat and banter. But you take that away, and there's not really much there. And actually, a lot of the time, there's a lot going on for them underneath all of that. So it was just unhealthy friendships. And that leads me into men and relationships, because it's exactly the same with men. Like, I'm a single mum, so I have had new relationships in my drinking and in my sobriety.
What's that like? What's dating like? What's the comparison?
Well, it took a while. It took a while for me to, like I said, with the friends, it took a while for everything to settle and for me to realize what it was that I liked. And initially, I just stayed away from it, because I just didn't want to. I don't know. I felt like I wasn't fully secure in my kind of new skin. But in the past, obviously, I would just go for someone that was completely chaotic and fun, which wasn't fun at all. And now I'm sober, and now I know what I'm attracted to. It's fascinating because, again, like you said about me being that person that I would have hated, the type of man that I'm drawn to now, I would never have looked at in a million years,
Yeah.
honestly. And I cannot believe that it's possible. And again, I used to look at these people in loving, healthy, happy relationships. I'd be like, oh, so boring.
Yeah.
Had, you know, oh, it's so dull. Nothing ever happens. And now I get it. I get it that, you know, the relationships on a much deeper level. Yeah, I've dated people that are sober because I have had one experience when I was sounds like I've had loads and loads of dates. I really haven't, Louisa.
Careful how you paint yourself.
But I was seeing a guy who was a drinker, but I explained that I was sober and it was, oh, it was fine, it was fine. But he was drinking around me and it was regular. And then the old thinking crept in of, oh, but what about when we go for our first, you know, dance and we go to a nightclub, or what about that nice first holiday? We have a night on the beach, a bit of music. And all of that noise just crept up. And before long, that was actually a contributing factor to why I picked up a drink after 15 months. And this time round, to be honest, sober, I'm attracted to sober people that live a sober lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's not so much to do with the alcohol as to do with the way they show up in the world and their values, really. And because I'm in this world and in this space, the majority of people that I interact with are sober, so it's no surprise. It is different. It is definitely different. In fact, that I'm going to talk about that at the end about what things I've done that I never thought I'd do.
Oh, well, that sounds really ominous. We'll park that one there.
Yeah, exactly. With relationships and friendships, I know that this word gets bounded around quite a lot, but I've learned what a boundary is. And that was something that I had no concept of at all. I don't know why I must have missed that class at school, but I just didn't understand what a boundary was and that I was allowed or entitled to, you know, to put one in. And I now realize that a boundary is for me. It's got nothing to do with the person that I'm distancing myself from. And that also it's non-negotiable and it's allowed to be non-negotiable. And it's because I'm protecting my peace and I'm protecting myself. I never did that. I never had the strength or the confidence or the self-love to do that in my drinking. And that's had a massive impact on my relationships because some of the ones that have been trickier, like my children's dad, my ex, you know, we've got a healthy, good relationship now, but I've had to slowly implement these boundaries that weren't there before. And again, that's been a real eye-opener for people because they're like, oh, who's this new version? Who's this Emily that's actually standing up for herself? But once you do it, it kind of becomes the new you and it the new normal. And that's really empowering. And that's been a huge game changer for me.
Old Emily wouldn't have been attracted to new Emily's beau then.
No, absolutely not. No. Although, I mean, I went in AA and in the sober space. What I love is that, you know, and I'm sure you, when you were drinking and, you know, all the people we know in sobriety, we would have all been the ones, the fun ones at the bar or the crazy
Yeah.
ones
I was
that were
just
you.
thinking we'd have been drinking together as
Yes,
single mums. Yeah.
I would have been attracted to you. And, you know, so all these people that I know in sobriety now, you know, we've all got the stories. We were all the ones kind of flying the flag of chasing the fun and the chaos. So there's still part of us that's that person, but we've turned it around and we're living sober, healthy lives. You know, what I used to think was that sober people were dull. We're all the crazy ones. We've just managed to kind of drag ourselves out of the pub and get well. So.
Yeah. And it is, I really do like, and I'm attracted to friendships and I'm not attracted to men because I'm married. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I don't look. I don't see men, just in case my husband listens to this. But, you know, you are more drawn to people that are looking after themselves, that are have an open mindset, that have a growth mentality, because it doesn't stop with the drink, putting down the drink. You know, there are so many things. You can still put down the drink and still, as one of my guests said, still be an arsehole. You know?
Yeah, that's very true.
It's not just about that. It's about then taking this time, this clarity and some self-reflection. Take some responsibility. Take accountability. AA calls it resentments. You know, if resentments are being picked up in you, then you need to work on them, let them go.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, there's so much opportunity for growth that I'm attracted to.
Absolutely. And there is, it's like the kind of the dry drunk phrase, you know, you can be sober, but you, that's almost a more difficult and challenging place to be in than actively drinking. Because if you're not well, if, like you said, you know, you can still be an arsehole and be sober. So, but exactly that is that. And also, I look at what I'm doing and I'm like, oh, look at that person, you know, getting actively engaged in their community and wanting to help. And oh, look what they're doing. They're setting themselves these physical challenges, or they're going off and doing this adventure, or they're learning that new skill. They're just flourishing. And that is what I want to be around. Like, your kind of frequency is the people that you frequently see. Like, I want to be around people that are, I was going to say on the up, and I don't mean it like that, but that are really living their optimum life, because it's infectious. And that's what I want to be around. So that's what I'm drawn to now, which again is the polar opposite of a man with a bit of banter stood at the bar compared to a man climbing a mountain or running a marathon. But you know, it's all change.
Well, we put it out there now for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So what's your third thing?
So the third is health, which covers an abundance of areas, but my physical health, my mental health, and actually my spiritual health, which is a topic that I don't really talk about very often, but my physical health has changed immeasurably. And I know that you're completely aware of all the physical benefits of removing alcohol, but there's areas that I didn't even consider that I would benefit from, like my sleep hygiene. I didn't even know that sleep was a priority, as long as I got some, you know. And I nurture and protect my sleep now, because, you know, with or without a hangover, if I don't get quality sleep, I can feel that I'm not myself and I'm not at my optimum. So I prioritize that. Exercise, obviously, I've always exercised, but I used to go to the gym because I wanted a body like Cindy Crawford. And it would still be nice, by the way. But what I go for predominantly now, what gets me in the gym now, is because of the mental benefits I get when I'm in there. Is that, like we were saying, just those the small steps that you take and those small wins actually all mount up, and it builds your self-worth and impacts everything. Like, even when I'm doing, saying to myself, I'm going to do 10 push-ups and I get to 8 and I'm like, oh, I can't do any more. I say to myself, you can, and I get to 10 and I'm like, that's a battle won. Like, I've won that battle today. And that really subtly feeds into other areas, because I realize that I can achieve these things. And none of that didn't exist before I got sober. So I love exercising, because again, I'm loving myself, I'm showing up for myself, and I'm starting to care about myself physically. You know, I'm 44 and I want to stay well for my kids and for me. I want to be well, I want to be fit. So the reason behind the gym is different, but yeah, I absolutely love it. And the same goes for food, really. And I'm no saint, and I do love a jelly tot now and again and a biscuit with my tea. But I am more conscious. I'm conscious of, you know, I eat bad stuff, but I know it's bad stuff, you know, but I want to try and eat as well as I can. So that obviously makes a massive difference. And the things like the wine weight, oh, that, I mean, and I know that that's not a main incentive to remove alcohol from your life, but I tell you what, it's a real bonus, because I don't know about you, but I carried this sort of weird roll of weight around my lower back and sort of my belly for years, thinking it was just because I'd had babies. But actually, it was like this wine weight that sort of 6 months into my sobriety, it just shifted. And people said to me, Emily, your whole shape has changed. So it wasn't so much like dramatic weight loss, as in I just, my body shape has changed because this wine weight has gone. And my skin as well. At the end of my drinking, honestly, I almost couldn't look myself in the mirror, especially when I woke up hungover. Because I'd look and my eyes had the dark circles under my eyes. My skin looked like tissue paper. I was blotchy. I was puffy. And, you know, this is vanity. I would look at myself and think, oh, if you look like this now and you carry on drinking, what are you going to look like when you're 50, which isn't that far off? And it terrified me, I've got to be honest.
I did the same thing though. You know, I had like a bag under one eye. Mm-hmm. And even now when I'm tired, if I'm really tired, this bag appears.
Yeah.
And it's like, God, it's gone. But I look back at the videos and photos I've got of myself as a drinker, particularly because I was really trying to motivate myself by recording myself a lot.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of trying to quit. And I'm looking at myself, I don't recognize myself.
You know that something's up when you can't really face looking at yourself in the mirror in the morning. You know that fundamentally something's got to change. And yes, I was conscious of, you know, skin and wrinkles and everything else, but it was more than that. We've all seen the photos, you know, that we've all shared of pictures when we were drinking, and I was like dead behind the eyes.
Yeah.
I was just broken.
I'm not agreeing that you were dead behind the eyes there. I'm saying that I was as well.
No, you can agree. It's fine.
But no, it is, isn't it? And again, you look at those before and after pictures.
Yeah.
I love looking at before and after pictures.
Yeah.
Because you can actually see that there's a glassiness to your eyes. It's almost like your soul.
Yeah, completely.
You're existing.
And I used to look at those pictures and the first thing I'd do is, oh, how much weight has she lost? And, you know, but actually it's so much more than that. It's about the joy and the life that comes from you know, looking into somebody's eyes that stopped drinking, is the glow and the enthusiasm for life. I mean, I used to have every type of eye drop possible. Glowing eyes, you know, glistening eyes, shiny eyes. Like I'd have all of this paraphernalia to try and hide or get rid of the pain behind my eyes. Little did I know it was, you know, a hole in the soul. And, you know, none of it worked. But mentally, my mental health, this has obviously been the biggest prize in my sobriety, because I've just reconnected with myself. There's so much that I've learned. And I've, one of the biggest ones is that my thoughts aren't facts. For me, that's really changed my life, because I
am going to get that tattooed on my forehead. You know that, for clients. Thoughts aren't facts. I always say that.
Because I used to listen to the bullshit in my head. I used to think that it was a fact, and it held me back for so long. It held me back from stopping drinking, because I used to listen to it when it said, oh, but it's your identity, and oh, you won't have any friends if you don't drink, and how will you ever go out? How will you ever meet someone? How will you go on a date? How will you go on holiday? You know, all of it. I used to listen to it and it was so loud. And now I realize that I can spot my thinking. It's like I'm, since I've removed alcohol, I am awake. And it's like I've become so much more conscious. And so I can spot my thoughts and I can pause and question what's going on and be rational. I was so irrational in my drinking.
And that is it, isn't it? It's that human beings have this wonderful ability of metacognition, thinking about your thoughts. Mm. And no other animal has that.
And I mean, it's amazing, but when you're drinking and you're thinking about your thoughts, it
you're
can
absorbed.
Be a dark, dark place that can keep you stuck. Yeah.
Because the brain doesn't work quite the same way when you've got a drink inside you. So you've not got that ability to step back. It's about observing your thoughts, not getting absorbed by them. But when you're drinking, you're absorbed by them.
Totally. Everything seems so much harder and bigger than it actually needs to be when you have drink inside you. You're so right. And the last point is my spiritual health, which I've never been to church. I wasn't brought up in any sort of religion, but obviously AA, you know, it underpins AA, the higher power is finding a higher power of some description, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be God. All I know is that when I was drinking, I was living in fear. I was constantly in fear of myself, of my actions, of other people, of letting myself down. I just lived in fear. And now I live in faith. So, you know, that phrase of like, oh, feel the fear and do it anyway. Now I'm like, oh, feel the faith and do it anyway. Just go for it. I can't quantify what that faith looks like or what it is. But all I know is that the love and that actually it'll all be all right in the end, even if it's not all right in that moment, you know, to have a little bit of faith of whatever it looks like for you, you know, that it will be all right in the end. Because when I was drinking, I was running the show. I was running the Emily show, and it was a shit show. And now I know that now Emily isn't running the show. It's all going to work out, and it's all going to be all right. And that's just such a lovely feeling to know that, that things work out in the end, you know? And even like I've said, even in those dark moments and those dark days, when I don't have a drink to pick up and try and escape the way I'm feeling, I still don't feel alone. Because I am living in faith now. So there we go. That was a lot.
That's brilliant. It's about relinquishing that control, isn't it? When you just
completely
let go and stop trying to control things, stop trying to overthink things, stop trying to control the narrative or to, you know, it's just about going, look, people will think what they want to think, people will believe what they want to believe. Ah, that's up to them.
Exactly.
And just let go, and everything will work out. Everything's going to work out.
Yeah.
What would you say? What would this Emily say to old Emily, as we've used that kind of analogy quite a lot?
Yeah.
On day one, what piece of advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, I would say to trust the process. And I would say that it will change your life immeasurably for the better, because it will. I've got quite a lot to say.
Carry on. You crack on. You give all the advice. I'll sit back.
Okay. I would say buckle up, because it's not all roses. So it's not always going to be easy, but the reward is so, so worth it. The benefits far outweigh the trickier times. That would be the main things that I would say to Emily.
That is absolutely amazing. And also, if you can go sober, you can do anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Emily, thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure.
It has been really, really lovely to catch up. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. All of the relevant links are in the show notes, including Emily's Instagram profile, Stepping on the Sober Train. And you'll find my Instagram profile in the show notes as well, if you'd like to find out more about me. Or you can head to my website, louisaevans.com, where you can find out more about my book, how you can use self-hypnosis to support you in your sobriety or with your mental health. And also, if you want some support, how you can work with me. I hope you have a fantastic day.